Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Family Matters, and I'm just so happy that you've all tuned in tonight to hear this great show with Brenda Garrison and her wonderful book. It's an exciting time in Illinois. We've got some great things going on with family law, and we've updated you regularly on that. Nationwide, there's a lot of things going on that are exciting for parents and children, and specifically for alienated parents. I don't talk about alienation much anymore, although this is what this show was born out of. Parental alienation, for those of you who don't know, is simply put when one parent turns the children against the other parent and his or her family, and it's normally through adversarial divorce. It is a horrible thing for the child. It is a horrible thing for the parent, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins. But tonight, I have a special guest just for a moment. He can call in for a few seconds, and he is Randy. And got a message from Randy this weekend, and I am so excited for him. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Jill.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Oh, I am so, so excited for you. Your message was just, brought me to tears. And it was a message about you for the past 10 years not seeing your daughter. And she has made an attempt to reunify with you. And that's coming up very soon. You did everything right. You read the right books. You sought out the right advice. You did what you were supposed to do. You actively waited for her to return, and now that's happening. How do you feel?
Oh, I'm excited. The funny thing is she lives like a quarter mile from my house, and haven't talked to her in 10 years on her because of her on her side. Definitely not because of me.
Yeah. That's the funny thing that people don't understand about this. They look at us as alienated parents and think, oh my gosh, you must have done something wrong. What did you do? We've got that stigma attached to us, yet they will get very excited about my friend David Goldman, whose son was taken to Brazil, and it makes national media attention. But what people don't realize is our children are just across town or sometimes in the same block, and we are not seeing them. They have kidnapped minds, in essence, and that was a book written by my good friend Pamela Richardson, A Kidnapped Mind, about her alienated son. So just across town, you hadn't seen her. How do you hope, or how did it happen? Can you tell me that? What was the catalyst for the reunification?
The catalyst was her uncle, my ex-brother-in-law, text me and said, is this still your phone number? And I said, yes, it was. Then he said, that's good. How are you doing? And kind of we went back and forth. And he told me, just to let you know, Tori is doing really good in church. She's a member here at my church, and she's doing really good. And he just went on to saying that, she's just doing really good. I said, that's nice. And he said, I'd like to get together with you and just kind of chit-chat. And I said, sure, let's do that. So we set up a day, and we got together. Then, of course, I knew where the conversation was going to go, and we both took it there, and that was, about Tori. And he told me that she wants to he approached her and said, Tori, everything's going really good in your life, but there's a missing piece that you have to get right, and your dad is the only father that you will ever have. And she agreed with him. And I was pretty excited because I've never heard anything positive in the last 10 years. Everything from her seeing me and avoiding me or looking straight ahead when they picked up my other boys. She'd come pick them up. She would look around. I mean, everything from tossing the car seat out of a car a block away because it wasn't mom's car seat. I'm a poster child for some of the books I've read.
Aren't we all? I think in a lot of cases, I think a lot of the parents that I talk to, I know a lot of them, including myself, struggle with the fact that our children were raised as Christian children. They know the morals, ethics, boundaries, and we gave them the proper guidance, Christian values that were instilled in them since birth. And I struggle with the fact that my daughter, who goes to a Christian university, my youngest daughter, how do they kind of rectify that Christianity with the loss of one half of themselves losing that half of their family. So there has to be some sort of struggle with the powers that be about that issue. Do you think Tori was maybe having some difficulty with that?
You know, because, I mean, it's hard to say what she was going through. I mean, because I would sit there just shake my head and just say, you know, what did I do? And it's hard to say what was going through her head. And I may never find out, you know, because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to look at the past.
Right.
I want to draw the line right where we start and go forward. Now,
right.
If she wants to bring it up, that's fine. But I definitely don't want to, you know, I'd love to ask her. I mean, I got a million whys. Why this? Why did you do this? Why did I have to go? I got a lot of whys, but I got to just hold it all in.
Right.
And let her just bring it out if that's possible.
And she will eventually. But, you know, I'll tell you, talk to your ex-brother-in-law, a pastor. I always love to talk to churches because pastors have such great authority over large groups of people multiple times a week. And I would venture to say that there's probably many other alienated children in his congregation. I would venture to say that there are alienators in his congregation that are passing with their children. There are parents out there who have ex-spouses in his congregation who need to be ministered to. So talk to him about this, Randy, and have him be a catalyst for change in your area.
Yeah.
It's really, really important. And I just applaud you. I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to think about you. And please keep
Thank
me posted.
You.
And I just hope that you both have a wonderful reunification. And it happens quickly, and it's positive, and things go well for you.
Well, thank you. I'm excited. I will definitely let you know.
Well, I appreciate you calling in. Thanks, and I'll talk to you soon.
Have a good day, Jill.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, we don't hear that very often, and lately I have heard that story a couple of times. So maybe probably the work that all of the advocates are doing nationwide through the Parental Alienation Awareness Organization USA is doing something positive for children in the United States and globally, and we hope to continue to make that change. I want to welcome my guest tonight, Brenda Garrison. Hi, Brenda.
Hey, Jill. It's great to be with you.
Great to be with you. What do you think about that story you just heard?
That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, my heart breaks for that man. I cannot imagine 10 years and, you know, the time that has passed and everything that he has missed. However, you know, our society, we are fast, you know, fast-paced, instant gratification, and we want things to happen now, not realizing that in God's timeline, things happen, and it may be years and years, but he is working. He's always working. So that was wonderful. He allowed his heart to remain soft towards his daughter and open and ready for reconciliation when she came back, and that's wonderful.
You know, and that's exactly what you said is how I feel about it, Brenda. I mean, this happened for a reason to me. This happens for a reason to parents, and God has a plan. And I think, you know, the ability that I've had to speak to and try to change legislation in Illinois and nationally and to speak to parents and grandparents, I would never have had that opportunity if I had not had this experience. So I guess God has a plan, and I always say, you know, you take that vinegar that you're handed and make it into lemonade somehow, and I feel like I've done that, but my heart aches for the parents who and grandparents who don't have the wherewithal to go on. They're financially, emotionally, psychologically devastated, and they just don't know where to turn. So if I can act as a cheerleader for them and be strong and aggressive about that issue, then thank God for that is what I say.
Oh, definitely, definitely. We all need someone to journey with us. And whether, you know, it's on a personal level or a professional level, we all need someone to you know, to keep ourselves moving forward. And that's great that you do that. It really is.
Well, I want to talk about you for a second. As we, as I said to you earlier, this is a Land of Lincoln show tonight. We are both in Illinois, and this is a ginger show, both redheads. So we've got a good thing going, and I feel like I'm at the state fair, Land of Lincoln champs. But just from hearing you, the short time that I've heard you, your bio does you justice. You're enthusiastic, and I can tell that you are a very heartfelt and authentic speaker. You minister to women in all stages of life, but especially to moms. Why just moms?
Well, not just moms. I've spoken to parents. I've spoken to dads in the group before, and to women in all walks of life, depending on what the topic is.
Okay.
But I'm passionate about what moms are going through because I'm a mom, and it's like it is just in your fiber when you become a mom. And it's like your best job and your worst job and everything in between. And, you know, there's so many things that are associated with, you know, it's almost sometimes like you're not allowed to say certain things if you're a mom, but we're all feeling it. There are some days when we are just sick of that kid. We cannot get that kid to school or to college fast enough. And people are like, oh, that's so mean to say that. No, really, she's driving me crazy. She needs to go. And so just that sisterhood that we have, and we know how the other person is thinking, and it's okay to say it amongst ourselves. And I just love being there for other moms because I feel it with them.
I think that's great. And not only have you written the book we're going to talk about tonight, but you have written two other books, called Queen Mom, A Royal Plan for Restoring Order in Your Home, and Princess Unaware, Finding the Fabulous in Every Day. What's the premise of those two books, and do they lead into this book? Is it a sequel kind of thing?
Technically, no, but kind of yes. The first one, Queen Mom, is when I wrote that when my kids were still, you know, very much at home and still very much doing the mom thing. I looked around, saw moms struggling, and I thought, okay, we can do this better. That's always my premise. We can do this better. And just to give mom some practical application, how you can guide your family, be the mom that's there for her kids, get away from following what the other moms are doing or even what the grandparents want you to do. You know, you do what God has put on your heart to do with your kids. And then Princess Unaware is nothing with parenting. It is for women, and even I would say, I've even recommended it for as young as junior high girls, through any age. This is a book to get you on track with what God has for you, you know, how he sees you, how much he loves you. I do two chapters on relationships because our relationships are so wonderful and so icky at the same time. And then just helping women overcome their fears and their excuses to get on with what they're actually put on earth here to do. And then, you can do all the right things like you and, the guest before me, Dave,
Randy,
we were talking
Randy.
About. Randy, that's right, Randy, thank you. You can do all the right things, but that does not mean you're going to get the result you want. And so then we have love no matter what, because A plus B never equals C. Mm-hmm. In your parenting, you're going to get a different result than you planned, and we need to be ready for that, whatever that happens to be.
Well, this book for tonight, Love No Matter What, When Your Kids Make Decisions You Don't Agree With, is a really interesting thing. And so I want to talk to you about I assume that your own experiences with your children led you to this. And you wrote this book with your daughter, Katie, which I think is amazing that you two can come together and she can comment on some things that your thoughts that you're espousing and talk about how she feels and how she felt at that moment. So talk about how you got the idea for the book. Was there a specific instance in your relationship with your children that said, this is it?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, and basically, you know, none of our kids are perfect. So I have stories with all the girls in the book, but Katie especially has always been a challenge. She's always been strong-willed. She's a very different personality than me. She's an introverted artist to the nth degree. And I totally did not understand that, did not have a clue how different she was from me for years and years and years. And so finally, after very rocky high school years, a few months after that, she came to us and said, even though she didn't have a job to support herself, and even though she had no money, she had rented an apartment, which I still don't understand how they managed to give her an apartment when she, you know, basically had nothing. But anyway, had rented an apartment. She was moving out on Saturday, either we help her move, or her boyfriend, who we did not care for at the time, and his friends would come help her move. And I'm like, oh, no, 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 back up the truck. Okay, this is not happening, at least. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, I knew not to speak. I mean, God was just like, you need to be quiet. I mean, you don't usually be quiet, but you need to be quiet now, because if you say what you're thinking, you are going to distance your daughter for years to come. So I sat quiet. Gene, my husband, talked with her, and he really realized, I mean, Gene got it before I did. This is happening. With or without us, this is happening. Mm-hmm. So he talked kind of practical details. And all the time, I'm thinking, you know, God's just saying, you need to get on board with this, because it's going to go with or without you. It's going to go. And so in that moment, I decided, okay, I'll get on board with this. You know, I was not happy on the outside, inside, but on the outside, you know, I did what I needed to do to be the supportive mom and start at that point to rebuild a relationship with her that was very, very strained, a lot of damage done there. So that was the beginning of our story. And throughout the book, we have stories of parents and kids in a multitude of situations, you know, just very, very different situations that people can hopefully find a family or an adult child that's also told their story that they can identify with as well.
And you have other children.
Yes, we have. Katie's our oldest. So Kelsey is our middle daughter. She was married in December. She's a fourth grade teacher. And then our youngest is a sophomore. Carrie's a sophomore in college.
Did you think, or do you think, that the same parenting style works for every child?
I think it depends on what you call parenting style. What do you mean by that?
well, what I mean is, what you did with Katie was the same as probably what you did with Carrie and Kelsey.
But I see what you're saying.
You did not have the same outcome.
Oh,
I'm
sure.
Right? I mean, probably
exactly.
Different outcomes, because kids are never the same.
Exactly.
So they take to your procedures a little differently, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Definitely. And, you know, that's a great point, because with Katie, we learned, especially when we got to this point with her and then from then on, we learned, you know, not to make issues of things, you know, major on the majors, minor on the minors. And if it doesn't have to be dealt with, let's just not make a big deal about it. Of course, she's out of the house now. She's not an in-the-home child. And she's very much an introvert, very much just doesn't like to be told what to do, very strong-willed. So then our youngest daughter, Carrie, at the time was probably junior or senior in high school. Can't remember exactly where. Not at the same time, but later on, she was a junior or senior in high school. Mm-hmm. She had her license. She was doing great, just really making good decisions. And we're like, okay, you know what, we're going to back up a little bit, and we're not going to lean in so heavy because you're making good decisions. You don't need us to breathe down your neck. And she started to feel that. She started to feel insecure about that. Like, mom and dad aren't active enough. I mean, we were very active. Don't get me wrong. We didn't start leaving her alone and going doing her own thing, but we just were letting her make more decisions. And so out of just, I don't know, frustration or just didn't know what to do, she got a speeding ticket. She earned it for a very high speed and cost her hundreds of dollars from her savings account. But that was her, so that didn't work with her. She still very much needed us to be really leaning in on her and very much involved. And Katie was like, you know, let's back up and give me as much space as possible and be involved where you need to be involved. So, yeah, you definitely have to. And that's one thing I try to tell parents. Become a student of your child, of each of your children. And so then you know how to relate to them in a way they can hear it. And they're not thinking you're always doing it one way with one kid. And, oh, I'm not like her, but you still treat me like that type of thing.
Did you ever fear that Katie would have Katie's actions and her moving out and being independent would have an effect on Kelsey or Carrie, and that they would follow in her footsteps just because she was this role model that maybe they wanted to be?
Not at all. This is a funny story. We have a 3-bedroom ranch house, so it's not huge. Katie moved out in the morning. That afternoon, Kelsey moved into Katie's room. Kelsey was taking measurements all that week of where she was going to put stuff. They had seen the turmoil. They were glad she was leaving. And they did not want to follow that path because they did not want to have the stress with mom and dad that Katie had experienced. So yeah, I didn't think that for a minute.
In the book, you address the issue of parental guilt. What do you mean by that?
Believing that this is all your fault. Whatever your child is doing, it's all your fault. And, you know, that gets really heavy and becomes paralyzing. And then we can't parent well because we're paralyzed with guilt, and then that brings on, you know, self-doubt and insecurity. Am I doing the right thing? Oh, she wouldn't be doing this. I cannot hold her responsible for actions because it's all my fault that she's doing this to begin with, blah, blah, blah. And that becomes a really heavy load that is totally not ours.
Don't you think every parent does that? I would have to think so. I mean, everyone I know does.
Oh, probably so. And the thing about this book is it's not just for parents whose kids are doing things that everybody goes, oh, no, you know, whispers about. This is for decisions on any level that you don't like. Because I have seen parents whose kids are just making decisions of going to a different college or maybe not going out for football and going out for band instead or whatever, making a big deal about it. And I'm thinking, you are burning some bridges here, people. This is totally ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I think we can experience parental guilt at any level, but still, it's still a lie. I mean, if you own something in the relationship, I tell parents, if you have been a pill, if you have offended your child or hovered or whatever your part in this disagreement and this stressed relationship, you need to own it. You need to apologize to your child and tell them you're going to do your best to make changes in the way your relationship is going. But then the child also has responsibilities. Your child needs to, if they're still home, they've got to follow the rules. And if they're not and they come home, they still have to respect the rules and the boundaries in your home. They still need to talk respectfully to you. They are still responsible for their own choices because they made those choices.
Do you think, and we talk about this really often on this show, and someone that I interviewed a couple of weeks ago, I think it was Dr. Carolyn Deitch, said, parents today are guilty of overparenting. And to take that a step further, you know, I say that we are raising, and myself included, when I had contact with my children, I was guilty of entitling my children and giving them everything they wanted and in helping them do things that they should have been doing on their own. Do you think we are guilty of overparenting our children at this point and making the road easier for them than maybe what our parents did for us?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And the thing is, we might be making today easier, but we're making tomorrow far more difficult.
Exactly.
And the things that our kids, you know, the things that we did as teenagers for ourselves, and now parents are like, oh, I need to help them with this. And we were like, if someone would have came up to me back then and said, you need to expect your dad to check the oil in your car every week, and I'd be going, it's you know, the car he's allowed me to drive, and I need to be the responsible one to check oil in it because I'm the one driving it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just stuff like that. We need to... Yeah, to let our kids have those personal responsibilities and become an adult.
Well, I think, you know, by losing so many family values, simple things like eating dinner together, putting kids in multiple sports or multiple activities, the breakdown of the family that we knew once is happening every day. And I think, you know, some of these 35 to 45-year-olds think they're doing such a great job parenting because they're giving their kids soccer and ballet and, you know, they're eating Subway in the back of the minivan on the way to the next activity is not the way to go about things. I think they need to look at, and this is important, the way that we were raised, you and I don't know how old you are, I'm 51, but
I'm
we ate dinner together every night. How old are you?
Mm-hmm. 54, just turned 54.
Mm-hmm. So same thing. And you sound like, you know, the good Midwestern girl that you probably had the same. I had a great childhood. I mean, we ate dinner together.
Right, right.
We did our
sure.
homework together with our parents. It was a good life. But that doesn't happen anymore. And I wish these younger parents could see this and see that it's doing damage to their children.
Because what is it teaching your kids? is teaching your kids, and I talk about this in Queen Mom as well, is teaching your kids that life revolves around me. Mom and Dad race home to take me to my activities and work over to pay for my activities, and the family never does anything together because I need to go to my activities. And they don't work together as a family. You know, we always divided the house up into fours and cleaned the house together every Saturday morning. The kids just knew. You don't do anything until the house is clean. Mm-hmm. And we divided it in fours. It goes pretty quickly. So, you know, just teaching them skills like that, that this life is not all about you, is just, and so now we have, you know, we're having a workforce and young adults that are getting out there, and life is still all about them. And, you know, sometimes I just even think I watch some of those house hunting shows, and I don't know how much of this is staged, but these kids, these young couples going through are like, oh, I don't like this and I don't like that. I'm like, oh my word, this is a $500,000 house and you can't find a room in this house.
My mom and I were just talking about that today. It is so funny that you watch these young couples looking at $400,000 and $500,000 homes and saying, well, I would have to redo all this.
Our first house. Oh my word!
You got to work for what you know, and the work ethic isn't there in our young people. I don't think anymore. I mean, you will have kids that want to go out and get a job and do what they need to do, but yeah, I think in the middle to upper class, the work ethic isn't there anymore
because they haven't had to do it. Mom and Dad are always filling in the spaces, and. You know, kids aren't getting jobs as soon as they used to get jobs. They're going all through college without having a real job, maybe an internship, but that's not a real job. I'm talking where you have to go in, you're the bottom man of the totem pole, and every day you go in, and every day is miserable, and you learn, this is why I go to college, so I can get a better job. But it builds character. My first job was awful. I'm sure yours was as well.
Oh, it was
awful. But you know what? You are a better person for it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you're a urine catcher at a racetrack, that
might be the worst one I've ever heard.
That was a good one. I know. I filled out an application the other day, and it was something. Somebody wanted me to enter this something. And what was your first job? And I put that, and I thought they're going to think I'm a nut. Anyway,
she's making that up.
Well, when you were going through all of this with Katie, what kind of toll did it take on your relationship with your husband?
It was a strain. However, I think we handled it well. There were times when he'd have to tell me, "Get a grip, okay? And maybe not you're overreacting, but you can't act like that in front of Katie." We would kind of, you know, balance each other out. But, yeah, we weren't all – I know it can be a strain on relationships, but really we were all we had. We didn't know anybody else going through this. Nobody was talking about how their kids were behaving. Their kids were not behaving well, but nobody was talking about it.
But they don't
want
you to
know
that.
About it. Exactly. And that's part of the reason I wrote the book, because I thought we went through this alone and it's silly. It's just ridiculous. We all know what's happening. Let's be there for each other and quit judging each other, quit judging each other's kids. But, it can be a real strain. It is, but we just got through it together and depended on each other and talked about it, but then we didn't let it dominate the conversation, and we still had two other kids that we needed to make a life for as well. And so, we just did the best we could like that.
So your advice for couples trying to stay close during a crisis situation would be just to stay communicating.
Stay communicating. Don't blame each other. If you need to get counseling on this, do. I mean, if you are both at polar ends and you're really struggling, or maybe one of you is just devastated emotionally, go ahead, get some good Christian counseling that can walk with you through this. One of the moms I interviewed in the book is a huge fan of Al-Anon. She had been going, she's been going for years now, but found a lot of strength and help and camaraderie in that group. So that might be an option for some parents as well. But realize the other parent is not the enemy. You guys, just like everything else in your marriage, you need to do this together and to not let this situation become the center, the focus of your marriage. Deal with it, put it off to the side, and then
Well, and I do know, I can think of a couple of situations where the mom, wife, is withholding information from the father. And they have a great marital relationship, but the children are causing so many problems, or one child in one particular case, and this mother is withholding this information from the father so he doesn't go off on the child. So, child who's 18. So how do you avoid playing good cop, bad cop in that situation? And how do you, I mean, you should never withhold information from your partner. I would think you would advocate for that, right?
Definitely. And that may be a case where you bring in a third party, maybe another couple that you both trust and respect, maybe a counselor, someone who can be there and help you process and help you walk through it. And, you know, there was one evening in particular, we had been going to a new church for a few months, and it was a young church, literally young in starting and young in people who attended. And so my husband and I were some of the oldest members of the church. And so about, I don't know, maybe 6 to 10 of us older couples got together one evening, and we were sitting on someone's deck in a circle, kind of going around, introducing ourselves, kind of telling our story. Each couple had a story of a child making decisions they didn't agree with. That was that was very, very difficult. And the sweet fellowship that we had, just to know that, hey, you're walking through it, you're walking through it. Hey, this isn't pretty, but you're doing it too. And to be able to find couples that are doing it and will walk through it with you, I think will help just release that tension, release that stress, and just, you know, maybe meet together and say, oh, you never know what he did again today, you know. I think that would mean so much, but the more it stays bottled up, the stronger the emotion gets, and the harder it is to deal with it.
Well, and it's like being an alienated parent. You know, you think you're the only one, and until you realize there's a whole group of us out there, it's so nice to be able to identify and think, you know, I'm not the only one that this is happening to. So I agree, you know, getting it out there and writing the book and letting people know that it's okay to talk about it and okay to commiserate with your fellow parents about issues that are happening with your kids. How can parents know if they're making an issue out of nothing?
In the book, I break it down into 3 or 4 sections. The first one is preferences. These are things that really do not matter. And I know sometimes Christian parents, we can make a right or wrong out of anything. But truly, there are a lot of black and white issues in the Bible, but there are a lot of things that are not black and white. God gives us room for personal preference. And so I've seen people make issues with their high school age children over table manners. I mean, just ridiculous. It's like, oops, sorry, you know, and the child wasn't being disrespectful, but they made an issue of it. We can make an issue out of things going to hair color. I'm not a big fan of piercings and tattoos, but you know what? I'm not going to let that come between me and my kid. We can make issues out of the way our kids dress. I'm not talking immoral dress. I'm talking just, I don't care for that. I mean, Katie went through a long season of wearing everything from Goodwill, and everything didn't need to match either. and so, you know, and it's like, oh, we paid good money for clothes. That's what you were into school today. Okay. So, you know, those are silly things we're laughing about, but that's right. They are silly, and we don't need to be making issues of these things. And then the next section, the next, you know, category I would call foolish. I mean, we can just say there's a crash and burn coming up. That is not going to work. And they have to try it. They have to see if it's going to work or not. And so that's another section of, is it foolishness? Is it just, you know, the Bible says there's foolishness pent up in the heart of a child. Is it just plain foolish? And then the third section, I put the immoral and illegal together. Immoral, anything that goes against the guidelines God has given us in His Word, and illegal, of course, anything that would be illegal in the state that you live.
Yeah, that's a good one. So many kids today are experimenting with things that they shouldn't be experimenting with. You know, in Central Illinois, we have the meth thing, and we have all of these ecstasy and all of these other things that the kids are trying. And I think, again, it ties back to the fact that they're bored, they don't have jobs, they don't have a lot to look forward to or a lot of places. In Central Illinois, we don't have a lot of places to go for kids 15 to 18 years old. Not a lot for them to do. And unless they're, you know, in athletics at school where they're expected to be physically adhere to a standard, they're out there trying things. And that's unfortunate. And unless you have two parents in the home, how do you deal with that, without a two-parent home? If you're in a child of a divorced family or a single mom raising children, is that a different set of rules for that kind of a dynamic?
I don't know if it's a different set of rules. I think the desired result is the same, but I think they have got the hardest job in the world. And, you know, those of us that can lean in and can help and can be there for the kids when it's just impossible for the other parent to be, or for the, you know, a parent to be there, definitely we need to do that. And as a single parent, looking for those who can speak into our kids' lives and can spend time with our kids and, you know, can pour into them is definitely important. But no matter if the parent is single or, you know, two-parent home or whatever, parents need to be available for the kids as much as possible. And so that means if you're working a job, which of course you need to do, but your other time needs to be focused on your kids. And when they're home, you be home and you provide the fun place to be and you provide the food and you know what's going on. And that just makes such a difference when kids know they are your priority. Yeah, mom and dad have to work, but then you know what? They don't go bowling. They come home and they hang out with me. And Katie's made a comment. You know, she would spend a lot of time in her room, but she made a comment. It meant a lot to her to know that we were always here for her, even though at sometimes she acted like she didn't want to see us at all. But it still meant a lot to her, especially in the long run. And so, yeah, I would just tell parents, you know, be invested in those kids because that is going to be your greatest guard or one of your greatest guards against all the other things they can be involved with.
You describe yourself as a former my way or the highway parent. What should parents not do as a parent when their kids make decisions they don't agree with?
Well, first you have to remember this is not about you. This is not about you. Yes, you have emotions to deal with, and you will deal with them with a spouse, with a friend, with a counselor later. But this is about your child. So you do not need to show how upset you are, how disappointed, how hurt, how embarrassed. This is about you, about your relationship with your child and what is best for your child. And so many times, you know, parents are like, you know what, we come down hard, we say, I told you so, whatever, and we are pushing our kids away, and we are not leaving them room to explain, to be who they are. And I'm not saying that, you know, doing bad things is who they are, but it might just be something that we just, you know, again, we just decided that we wanted them to go out for a certain sport, and when they didn't go out for that and then something else happened, then of course it's all their fault because they didn't do what you told them to in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And we are just saying there's no room for relationship here unless you do it my way. And kids aren't going to hang around for that. They're going to find some place where they can have a relationship that they are truly cared about and accepted.
So saying all that, what kind of look did you have on your face when you were carrying boxes into Katie's apartment, moving her in with her boyfriend? How did you show, because you can say a lot of things that are positive and trying to reinforce that, you know, this is something that you're going to allow her to do. But oftentimes, you know, it's written all over your face what you really feel. So how did you mask that when you were moving her?
Right. Well, first, not to split hairs, but first, she didn't move into her apartment. She did move in with her boyfriend in this particular apartment. Later, there was an apartment they shared. But this first one was all hers, all on her dime. But we didn't trust him to not take advantage of the situation. Don't think we're that naive.
Right.
We didn't, but it was truly her apartment. So if it had been her moving in with him, we would not have participated
helped
at all. Because we would,
okay.
Yeah, not at all. And so what was my look on my face? You know, and the kids are always like, Mom, you know, you can't hide anything. Because I can't lie. I can't act. I'm just who I am. And so I'm sure, you know, there was some tension there, but I was there. And I had went and, you know, we had, you go through the house and just find your doubles with casseroles and sheets and all the things that you don't really need anymore. And I went to Walmart and bought some cleaning supplies and household items. So I was making a genuine effort. And I remember we had asked one of our guy friends to come over and help move a couple of heavy things in. And he's there, he's all chipper, and he's like, "Oh, I remember my first apartment, blah, blah, blah." I'm like, "Just, you can be quiet right now.
Just be quiet.
We are not happy in this room." We kind of just got through that morning.
Yeah. Well, how did dealing with the decisions you didn't agree with affect your life spiritually?
Oh, it just, yeah, it took me to God even more. I mean, talk about prayer. Because this was the first time Katie was sleeping in an apartment or in somewhere totally alone. I mean, she'd been to camp and all that type of thing, but there were people there that, you know, that cared for and watched out for her. She was in a situation where she had no one around, totally alone. And I just prayed, and it just kept driving me to God, to the Bible, to find answers, to learn how to do this better, again, so I wouldn't cause more damage to the relationship than I had already caused. And what can we do to truly help her? What can we do, you know, what is our role here? So, yeah, it really, you know, pushed me in even more with God and his word and prayer.
And how did God answer you? What did he say?
Oh, wow. Read the book. No. Lots of things.
I did.
Lots of things in the book. I know you did. But I would point parents, if I could take them one place, like just even tonight, go to Luke 15, the story of the prodigal son. There is so much in that story that we can learn from. And one of the phrases that I love in that parable is when he came to his senses. You know, when he came to his senses, then he came home, then he repented, and then everything was, you know, rebuilding relationship with his family. But the kid had to come to the end of himself. The dad let him come to the end of himself. He didn't send care packages. He didn't send servants to spy on him. Not to say that we shouldn't send care packages to our kids, but the dad just let him run his course. And when he came, you know, just like Randy, the first caller, he had open arms ready for relationship. His heart remained ready for relationship. So, yeah, that was that. Luke 15, I've gone there many times for instruction and inspiration.
Good resource. It's a good resource. Where else can parents educate themselves on issues that may be overtaking their child's life?
I would say, depending on what that issue is, one resource that I think is great and probably pretty well underutilized is any young person that you know is just a step or two ahead of your child. Because even now Katie's 27, our youngest is 19, and Katie has even made mention that that generation, our youngest daughter's generation, is even so much different than when she was that age.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can just find somebody who will talk to you and tell you as it is, so you can have some insight into what your kid's going through. And then, you know, if they are into drugs and alcohol, maybe you do need to get professional help and join an Al-Anon group or whatever is available in your area so that you can become familiar with what your kid is going through so you can be better prepared to help them, but also better prepared to journey through this yourself with the rest of your family members and with your spouse.
And you can't hide your head in the sand. If something like that is happening, you can't be embarrassed or afraid to seek professional help.
Oh, definitely not. You know, and this is a phrase that I thought I kind of came up with this, but I saw it on a little sign somewhere the other day. I thought, oh, well, I guess I didn't coin that. But anyway, yeah, I know. I thought, oh, well, they're copying me. But, you know, this is what Gene and I, after so many times of Katie coming to us with that tone in her voice and getting ready to tell us her next big great idea, you know, we just kind of, it is what it is. It is what it is. Don't try to unpack it. Don't try to figure it out. Don't try to entangle it. Just deal with it. And again, back to Randy, who is a really wise man. He's like, you know what? If she wants to tell me what happened, that's great. If not, I just want to move forward. And that's kind of what we need to be as our kids. you know, just let's move forward. Let's help him however we can. There may be issues that need to be dealt with, but a lot of that probably is just extra baggage. So if there was a point that needs to be dealt with, get help, deal with it. But then let's move forward. Let's not keep score of every offense that has happened in between time. It is what it is. It's yours. Now let's deal with it, and let's do it well.
So you've moved forward. You're doing things well. How do you then begin to build healthy boundaries with your kids, and why are those boundaries necessary?
Well, I think good, healthy boundaries are good, or necessary in any relationship. But we have what we call the non-negotiables, and they're almost an unspoken whatever because we've been doing it for so long. But these are our non-negotiables. So if you want to come into our house and be in relationship and bring your friends in, these are the things that are going to be expected and not allowed. And there's just one silly one. We have other serious ones, but one silly one, but we still enforce it. As I mentioned, we have a three-bedroom ranch. So when you come in the front door, there's an entryway. You go to the first right is down the hallway with all the bedrooms and a couple bathrooms. And then the other areas of the house are all living spaces. Mm-hmm. And so the only place that the guys cannot go is down that hall to the bedrooms. And we call it no man's land. And it's just, they're just not allowed to go down there. Just never allowed. And it's funny because one of our girls' boyfriends will go up to the doorway and kind of act like there's this invisible shield there. He's trying to put his hands on the little mom, like, that invisible shield is called Jean, and you will never go down there until you marry one of our girls. So, but just stuff like that,
he'll probably marry one of them just to spite you.
First, he has to get past Jean for that one as well. So, okay.
That's funny. Well, boundaries are important, obviously, and just list off a couple of your very serious ones.
Okay, sure. We don't allow smoking in our home. It's just not allowed. It's one of our rules. There is, of course, if there's no man's land, there's also no sharing a bedroom if you're not married. Let's see, of course, any type of cussing or even taking God's name in vain. It's just not allowed. And so those types of things, you know, we treat each other with respect. Whoever is, you know, whatever, we're not going to stir up trouble with the siblings to undermine the parental authority. So you're not going to come in and say, oh, you know what you can get by with? This is what I got by with mom and dad. You can do it too.
Yeah.
Not happening, you know. And so within, you know, these very few but serious boundaries, come, have relationship, whatever. We want you here. But you just can't bring your junk that is going to make the whole house uncomfortable. You can't bring that in. But we want you here, and we're going to love on you when you're here.
Yeah, don't come here and pollute the purity of our home and what we have worked so hard to develop as a protocol here.
Exactly, because we want it to be a refuge for everyone. So, you know, that's just a healthy boundary. We come here, we're all going to have a good, fun, safe time. And that is just a gift that we give to you. We give to everyone who comes in.
Have you found that through your kids' lives, they've brought home friends to your home that have sought refuge in your home because of what you've developed there and how you raised your children?
I think they've definitely noticed the difference. And, now you say that, one girl in particular. I don't want to reveal any confidences, but one girl in particular was, you know, just, she's like, wow, I wish my house was like this, wish my parents were like this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult for some kids. You know, as we said, they live in homes that are not intact or single moms and that are struggling to just put food on the table. And to come to a home like yours is like being at the Ritz, you know, in a spiritual and emotional and psychological way for some kids probably. So good on you for what you did in your parenting style. What advice can you give to parents who have to exhibit tough love and go through this walk with kids who are having issues?
And that is really important because it's so hard because I have a fear of being misunderstood. So I don't want them to think, okay, now you're just being mean, you're just picking on me. No, 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 that's not the case. But we do have to demonstrate that tough love. But I think when we're doing all these other things that I talk about in the book, building relationship, being available, just pursuing relationship with our kid, whatever that sounds like and looks like to our kids, when we're there for them and they know we're that they are our priority, then when we have to do the tough love and we have to say, you know what, that's not allowed here or whatever, they're still going to throw up a stink and they're still going to, you know, say, you don't care, whatever. But they know, deep down, they know you love them no matter what. And
yeah.
That will help carry through the years. And for parents to know, this is not an overnight quick fix. I mean, this process is years. For us, it has been years. But it's not a quick fix. And so you just have to be ready to hang in there with your kid. No matter what they say, you're still hanging in there with them.
And there are some cases, Brenda, where there is not a fix. And their relationship with their child doesn't have a happy ending. How do you tell parents to cope with something like that?
I still keep praying. Keep praying, because you know what? The last page is not written. Keep praying. Keep that door open. Hand them over to the Lord, and you got to keep moving on with your life, and God will give you what you need to get through that. But I would just say keep praying, and because you don't know what's going on with your child, and you don't know. I might not tell the story correctly, but in his, I think it was his first book from Pastor Jim Cimbala, Fresh Wind, Fresh Fire. He tells the story of his daughter, I believe it was that book, who had just gone off the deep end. And to make a very wonderful story, please get the book and read it. Very short, but she had, you know, been gone and for months, maybe even years. And, you know, she had kind of cut her off, saying, until she comes back, we cannot give her money for this lifestyle, blah, blah, blah. One night in their prayer meeting, they just prayed for her. The next day or two, she came back in tears, because she had felt the Holy Spirit moving in her and speaking to her so powerfully, and that was the beginning of her repentance and her turning back around. So even after years involved in awful things, you know, keep praying, keep your friends praying, never give up hope.
I think that's a really powerful story, and I think one thing that you said is especially important with families like this, and this plays again into the alienation aspect of life, is that you have to, a phrase that I did coin, I think, I haven't seen it on a plaque or anything yet, called
yes.
Actively waiting, and you are actively waiting for your children to come
good.
Home, and that means, and when I said that, what I meant was you have to work toward changing what has affected your life so in such a devastating way, but you also have to be thankful for what you have in your life right now and live your life, because if you allow this and in this situation, if you have a child who's doing something that you don't agree with, if you allow it to consume you, it will kill you. And I don't mean in a literal way, but it will take its effects on you psychologically, emotionally, and physically.
Exactly. One of the dads I interviewed for the book just happened to be a Christian counselor, and he said, you need to contain the crisis, and you really do. It's almost like, you know, I'm very visual. I gave the picture, you know, just taking a coffee can, digging a hole in the yard, planting a flower in that coffee can, and that is your crisis. It's there, and it cannot spread to the rest of the yard, cannot spread to the rest of your life. And because being upset, letting it tear you to shreds, is not helping the situation at all.
No.
And
no.
That you have to grieve it. You do. You have to grieve it, and but you have to move on. This is one more thing in life that you have to deal with, but you do have to move on and deal with it.
And the other thing that I tell parents is, who do you want to be when your kids grow up? You don't want them coming back to a pile of goo. You know, you want to be the strong, assertive, confident
right.
person that can give them then the guidance that they need at that moment.
Definitely. Definitely.
So,
that's really well said, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So stay really, really strong. What are some ways parents can start loving their children no matter what right now? If their children are gone, if they're off doing something that they don't agree with, how can they continue to just keep that love strong in their heart for those kids?
Well, I would start, build that relationship, be available, figure out who your kid is, what are his likes, what are his dislikes, what speaks love to him, be involved in his life. If he's into whatever activity, you be there, you cheer him on. And even if they, you know, there was a time when the kids would just barely glance up, but they did glance up to see that we were there, and that meant a lot to them to know that we were there for them. And I know that's hard, even when, especially in the midst of them doing stuff, but be there, show them love, even in the midst of this, because they're playing the tape of all the things that have happened that you have said that you probably are sorry about now, and you need to show them, physically show them, that you're a different person and you really do want a relationship with them, and that you're not going to be bringing up their garbage every time you get together. You've got to stop nagging and start listening.
Perfectly said. And again, that this applies to alienated parents. You know, I didn't think this would be as big a crossover, this subject, as it has been tonight, but it really, really does speak to all of the target parents out there and the waiting that they're doing and being involved, staying involved in children's lives, whether they want to see you or not. Well, this has gone so fast, and I'm so sorry. We have about 4 minutes left, and I want to just talk about where we can find your book.
Anywhere books are sold, and it is on, it's available on Amazon as an ebook as well. So anywhere you get a book, Christian bookstores, Amazon, CBD, off my website, which is BrendaGarrison.com.
Okay, BrendaGarrison.com.
Yeah. And I would love for them to visit the website and get there. I have a page of resources that they can PDF, they can print off, and I have 3 for parents, lots of other helpful stuff, and for women, and just good pieces, good articles, helpful blogs. So, yeah, just visit there. I'd love to have them visit.
Well, this is a great, great resource, and it is Brenda Garrison's book, Love No Matter What, When Your Kids Make Decisions You Don't Agree With. And this happens to every parent. If you're out there saying, my kids are perfect, you're lying to yourself, because they're not. They are not. Christian, not Christian, whatever it is, kids are not perfect, and they're going to make mistakes. And we have to do the best we can to keep them on the straight and narrow. And I think Brenda's book is a perfect guidebook for that, and to try to help you maneuver through difficult times with your child. I appreciate you being here so much tonight, Brenda.
Oh, it was great to be with you. Thank you. It was a great discussion. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, I'm so glad you did. And if you're down Springfield way, please don't hesitate to contact me. I'll show you around and take you over to the Presidential Museum, the only one like it in the country. We like it. We're proud of it. So
awesome.
Let me know if you're here, and I appreciate you being here. You have a great evening, and thank you all for tuning in tonight and listening to this great discussion with Brenda. We'll see you next time. I'm Jill Ajeezy, and this was Family Matters. Thank you.